It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed at the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million,
if I had $1 million,
if I had $1 million,
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Larry. How are we doing today?
Here it is, Saturday again. I'll tell you, it comes around every 6 days, whether you want it to or not.
That's what they tell me.
That's the way it starts.
Well, just to give you a heads up, Larry, I'm mailing it in today. It's been a rough couple weeks, a little tired. I think I got out all my energy on the three previous episodes talking about state-run retirement plans that I'm checking out today.
They definitely were stellar episodes. I know I listened to all three. Over and over and over again.
Just to make yourself more angry.
Just to make myself more angry, and it didn't change anything. They're still not very good. But nevertheless, we're going to move to the next step. Okay, if you are not inclined to adopt one of these state-run plans, which you're nuts if you do, then what do you do? How do you decide which retirement plan to go with? So let's take it from there, John.
We have several options that we can choose from. Why don't we start with the KEO?
Well, KEO went away quite a few years ago, probably.
It did, yeah.
Yeah, no more KEOs.
All right. Well, how about we try the SARSEP?
John, I hate to tell you, SARSEP can't do it anymore either. Took that away in 2006, so it's only been 10 years.
All right. Well, I'm just going to have to mail it in. Why don't you pick one?
Let me pick one. The most common question that I get talking to employers is, what kind of plan should I do? And I answer that question with my favorite answer, it depends. Because it does. It depends on what you want to do. There are a variety of different plans. Just to name some of the most common, you know, the SEP IRA is just a basic SEP IRA plan. We'll talk more about it. You have a simple IRA, which is sort of simple. The 403B, strictly for not-profit and educational organizations. The 401k, by far my favorite, most flexible, gives us a lot of ability to put a lot of money away. The profit sharing and money purchase plan are kind of a variation, serve different specific categories that you're looking for. And, of course, the old defined benefit, the basic plan that was around when we all had pensions years and years and years ago. Not too many of those anymore. And that kind of migrated or evolved into a cash balance plan, which is a hybrid, of course. Hybrid plan between a DB and a profit-sharing plan allows you to put away more in terms of your contribution than just the basic $53,000 or $59,000 that we can get into the other types of plans. So
it's a hybrid.
It means
the government likes it.
It's a hybrid. The government probably does like it, actually, okay. John. But the most basic, the SEP IRA, can be established by any employer. So if you're an employer, you can set up a SEP IRA for your employees. And you include, as far as eligibility, any employees who have been employed in 3 of the last 5 years, they're at least 21 years old, and have earned at least $600. So 3 out of 5 years, age 21, earn $600, they're eligible to set up an IRA as part of the SEP IRA. You have to establish the plan by the tax filing deadline of the employer. Typically, that is the calendar year, so December 31st, if you wanted to do something for the year 2016, IRAs must be established for all eligible employees. So anyone who meets those eligibility requirements, 3 out of 5 years, age 21, earn $600, has to be included. You cannot exclude them for any reason, like or not. The coverage and discrimination testing, there really aren't any once you set it up. There are no annual filings or annual required disclosures from the employer. I would warn the employer, though, even though you don't have an IRS or DOL 5500 to file, your documents need to be in order. You need an adoption agreement. You need the short form trust agreement. You need the enrollment forms filled out and beneficiary forms, and they should all be in your file, because otherwise, if you get audited and they see you've taken a deduction and your files are not in order, you may be paying tax on everything you put away. So do your math, do the homework, and have it put away so you don't get in trouble on audit. The pre-tax contributions are the participants into actually SEP IRA. When it was a SAR-SEP, you could do participant contributions. That went away, as I said, I think in 2006. So the SEP IRA today is fully funded by the employer. It is discretionary. The employer doesn't have to put money into it on a year-by-year basis, but he can make that decision up until the time he files his taxes, which may be, you know, March of the next year or possibly even an extended time frame. And he can put in up to 25%. That's right, folks, 25% of compensation up to the $53,000 into the plan during a year. Now, what does that mean? That means that he has to put in the same amount for all employees. If he has 10 employees and their total comp is $250,000, then he's going to be putting in $25,000 divided on a salary pro rata basis between his 10 employees. And that money is immediately 100% vested. One catch, a lot of people don't realize, there are no loans on a SEP IRA, and the participant has immediate access to the money. I have seen a few plans, makes no sense, but I have seen a few where the doctor or lawyer or Indian chief, whoever it is, puts the money in on Tuesday and it lands and the participant takes it out on Friday. Of course, they pay 10% federal premature withdrawal tax and federal and state tax, but there's no way to force them to keep the money in the plan. So that's kind of a downfall in my opinion, but nevertheless, that's how a SEP IRA works. The biggest disadvantage, I think, is you have to put in the same percentage for everybody. And I have seen plans that have put in 10, 15, up to the 25% for everyone. But it's more uncommon than it is common.
So why would an employer want to commit themselves to that kind of contribution? Not that they have to do it every year, but to that amount, is it just to avoid the testing and the filing of the 5500 and so forth? Is that such the advantage?
Well, the advantage is it is a very simple type of plan to set up and to monitor and fund. The contribution is discretionary, so they don't have to do it. The plans I've seen who have done it, they are very benevolent. They like to bonus or provide additional compensation to their employees every year, and they're willing to put in a large amount. The most common reason I find those plans exist is because the employer did not consult someone who, as we are, specialists in the industry. He doesn't know what other plans are out there. A lot of times their CPA or accountant might know that he could put in up to 25% of compensation for everybody, and that's the simplest way of doing it, and they just do it because of ignorance to a certain extent. They are not aware of the other features that we have.
Okay, so from looking at our various options that we're going to talk about today, this is probably obviously the easiest to set up, easiest to maintain from employer's perspective, but could become expensive from a contribution standpoint, and the employee does not get to contribute any money.
You're right.
Ooh, I'm out.
You're burning. No, you're not out.
All right, well.
Maybe down, but you're not out, John.
Probably another simple plan, no pun intended. Actually, it was.
Mm-hmm.
The simple IRA is similar to the SEP IRA. Has a required match, 3% on employee's contribution, may be reduced to 1% in a 2 or 5 years, or 2% of compensation to all eligible employees.
Clear as mud.
So basically what they're trying to say is you have some flexibility on a year-to-year basis. If you know you have a cash flow situation, you can reduce it to 1% in 2 of the 5 years. There is a catch-up provision in there, which is $3,000 for 2016. And all employees earning $5,000 for any past 2 years is expected to do so in the current year. There's no age limit, and it may exclude union employees. So just like with the SEP, the individual will direct the investments. The simple IRA, the individual will direct the investments. There is no filing of the 5500. So if you are an employer and you do have a concern about the contribution amount, this may be a nice alternative to the SEP IRA.
It's not a bad alternative, John. The things that I run into with employers are in the simple IRA, many of them, again, don't do the proper documentation, which is an issue. They have to do the match up to 3%, or they can reduce it in basically the 2 out of 5 years, I believe it was.
Yeah, the match can be reduced in
two out of every 5 years. To 1%, or they do 2% of comp, but that's it.
On everyone.
They can't do any more than that, so yeah. It doesn't give them any more flexibility. You do either the match or the 2% contribution, and basically you're done.
Well, then you can set up a profit-sharing plan on the side.
No, you can't, actually. If you have a simple, you cannot have any other type of qualified plan during that 12-month calendar period. So right now, actually on a simple would be the time, if someone has a simple IRA, to begin the process of closing the simple down between now and December 31st, and that should require giving all participants notice by December 1st that it is the intent of the employer to no longer fund the simple in 2017, and then you could set up a 401k or profit sharing in 2017. But during the course of the 12-month year that a simple is in place, you cannot have any other kind of plan.
So, not even a cash balance?
Not even a cash balance plan. So you're kind of stuck with that one when you put it together. Again, everything you put in is immediately vested. So once the money goes in, it's there. And I guess the easiest question I ask when determining whether to do a simple IRA or a 401k, 403b would be, how much money does the employer and the other employees expect to put in? If they're okay limiting their contribution to the $12,500 deferral into the simple IRA, and the $3,000 match or catch up if they're 50 and older, so they can do 15.5, and that's pretty much it besides the match that's put in, then a simple might be a good way to go. But if they're really looking to max out their contribution, and or they want the profit sharing piece to be subject to vesting, which means if the employee leaves, then if they haven't fulfilled the vesting schedule, then the money stays in the plan and is allocated to the remaining participants who have stayed with the company. There's some incentive there for that. Then a 401k or 403b may be more appropriate than the simple. So we talked about the SEP IRA. You put in the same amount for everybody on any year that you wanted to do it, although it is optional. You don't have to do it. On the simple, you have to put money in regardless of whether you want to or not, by in accordance with one of the formulas, and you are limited on how much money you can put in, quite a bit. So what's our next step, John?
Well, they're the two quote-unquote simple alternatives where we don't have to worry too much about testing and filing of 5500s. Obviously, the most common one that we have, the plan that Larry and I favor, is the 401k.
Yay!
We do have a couple different types of 401ks. So we'll talk about the just plain vanilla 401k that most employers provide and most of us are participating in. Any corporation, partnership, limited liability company can set one up. The employee and the employer can contribute. In some cases, it can be an employee only where there is no match. The employer can design a match that falls within some pretty broad parameters, so they have the flexibility to determine the match based on years of service, things like that. The vesting schedule applies where the employer has the ability to reward longer-term employees by putting in a vesting schedule. That means after 2 years, you can have 20% of your money, after 3 years, 40%, and then you'd have to be there 5 years or longer before you can get access to everything. The employee can contribute up to $18,000 in 2016. And that also has a $6,000 catch-up provision for anyone over 50.
So I could put $24,000 into my plan on a pre-tax basis. Is that right?
That's correct. And that doesn't include any match that the employer may offer.
So if you're in a 30% tax bracket, that means I'm going to save about $7,500 in taxes.
If my math is correct,
give or take. I'll use other numbers. But anyway, 401k plan, basically, it can be established by any employer other than governmental entities. They cannot do a 401k plan. As John mentioned, any employee...
But the states can now.
Well, the states have their own plan, don't they? Not subject to any rules or restrictions.
No, we're not going there. We covered that last three episodes, and we're over it now.
I'm not over it, but I'm not going to do that, John. So.
Okay.
The 401k plan has to be established before the last day of the plan year. However, no deferrals can be put into the plan prior to the adoption agreement being signed. So it would limit the amount you could put in 2016. If you set up a plan now through the end of the year, you would only have 3 months or 2 months or 1 month to defer. So unless you did a pretty good sized bonus payment and put a lot of it in, it'd be difficult to get up to the $18,000 or $24,000. It is a qualified trust. It requires a trust document. That's what people hire us to do, is to put in place a trust document. We are not lawyers. We do not give legal advice. However, this
did
is...
play one on TV.
That's next week, isn't it?
Oh, okay.
Okay. However, this is one area of the law. The trusts are drafted by attorneys. They are reviewed and approved by the IRS. And basically, as long as we stay within the forms and the questions that have been pre-approved, then we don't have to be a lawyer to execute a trust document for a trustee, because all of the questions we're selecting from have been pre-reviewed and pre-approved. And that is a pre-approved plan, as they call it.
One thing I did want to clarify was with the vesting. I wanted to make sure that everyone understood. Any money that you put in and the growth attributed to the money that you put in is always your money. That's always 100% vested. So if you were to leave, you could roll it over. If you went to a new company, you could move that money over to the new employer that you're working for. The part that the vesting schedule will apply to is the money that the company would to put in for matching or something like that. That money could be subject to a vesting schedule, and that's where the employer tries to reward longer-term employees and so forth. So if you were to leave after 2 years, you may only get 40% of what the company put in. I just wanted to clarify that.
That is exactly correct. The vesting does apply to potentially. That's two for two, John. The vesting does apply potentially to the match that goes in and any profit-sharing contribution that goes in. And it can be either a cliff, what we call a cliff vesting schedule.
Or graded.
Or a graded vesting schedule, depending on what is elected.
That's 401k 101.
That is 401k, yeah, 101. and so you can have either a cliff, which means you're there 1, 2, or 3 years, and at the end of that third year, you become 100% vested, although you are 0% the first 2 years. And the graded might be 0% the first year, 20% second, then 40, 60, 80, and 100%. Down the road. So that portion that stays in the plan gets reallocated to the other participants based on the type of contribution. So if it's profit sharing money being forfeited into the forfeiture account from vesting, then we reallocate it as a profit sharing contribution. If it's match, it gets reallocated as a match contribution, or the employer can elect to use to reduce a future contribution. So there's some choices there, all spelled out plainly in your summary plan description, if you got one, and if you read it, so you can find out about that.
And that's one thing to keep in mind for our employees out there. If you are looking to make a change in your employer, you do want to review the plan, the summary plan description, because if you've been there for 2.5 years and it's a 3-year cliff, you may want to stick it out for another 6 months so you can get the full match that the employer had put in. Whereas if you left after that 2.5 years, you would get zip of the employer money that they put in. That might be sizable.
And is that zippity-doo-dah?
Something like that.
That's what you're going to get if you leave before you're vested. So
I like it.
Always make sure you check the vesting schedule. Distributions within a 401k. Remember we said on the SEP IRA, and actually on the simple IRA, the participant has immediate access to their money. As soon as it goes in, they can take it back out again. So not always ideal if the employer is hoping to provide a retirement income in the future for their employee. Because if they take it out just as fast as it goes in, it's really defeating the whole purpose of the thing. So that's something to keep in mind. On 401, you are restricted subject to the plan terms. Plan terms typically will not allow you to get your money until death.
That's kind of harsh.
Disability, not good either.
Still harsh.
Termination of employment.
Not as bad, but...
Or retirement.
Ah, that's what we talk about.
Those are the four distributable events that are part of every qualified plan. So if you retire, you can get your money. If you terminate employment, in most cases, not all, you can get your money. And of course, if you become disabled or you die, then you are eligible for your beneficiary to get your money upon death. So
there is also the hardship, but that has special provisions. And in all honesty, given how tight those provisions are, I don't see too many hardships going through. So, but that is another, if the plan allows it. Also, there are loans. If the plan allows loans.
We don't like to talk about those.
I know, but they're available. A lot of people do treat their 401k account as an ATM. As soon as they're eligible for a loan, they go and take it. That's not prudent. This is money to be set aside for retirement. But in a pinch, they could be available depending on the plan document as well.
It could be, and it is a loan. It does have to be paid back. And in most plans, it has to be paid back as a deduction from your paycheck. So you're not writing a monthly or quarterly or weekly check to pay it back. It's taken out of your paycheck as a deferral payment and goes into your loan. If you, for whatever reason, neglect to make payments for, let's just say, 6 months in round numbers, then the loan is automatically defaulted. It's termed a distribution. You get a 1099 at the end of the year minus 20% withheld for taxes. And it becomes federally and state taxed, as well as a 10% distribution penalty if you are under age 59 and a half. The other option on distributions from plans, if you're not age 65 in retirement, you can have early retirement. A plan may allow you to have up to age 55 as early retirement. And if the plan allows what's called an in-service distribution, these things are not complex, but they are complicated. So read your plan document and determine what you can and cannot do. We get questions all the time from participants. You know, I need to take a loan. How long can I take it for? Well, you're limited to 5 years payback period unless it's for a residence, and I generally don't recommend that. 5 year payback period, you can have up to 50% of your vested account balance not to exceed $50,000. That's it. That's all you can get out of your plan. And when people come back, they have one loan, they pay it down, let's say for a few years, and they come back and they want to take a second loan. Well, you don't get half of the balance of your account. You get half of whatever your highest account loan value was during the past 12 months, subtracted from your account value, and then whatever's left, you get half of that. So it's a little more complex in terms of determining what you can take as a second loan. Hardships, as John mentioned, there are IRS-approved hardship provisions. There's about six of them now, and they can be for things, the medical expenses that you cannot pay. They can be for first-time home purchase. They can be for college in some cases, for paying for college. They can be for catastrophic events, the hurricanes and floods and such events have been given special category under hardship in some cases to allow you to take a hardship distribution when you do that. But of course, when you do take a hardship, that money is just like a distribution. It's fully taxed and it's subject to a 10% penalty if you are under age 59 and a half. We have had people, and you have to have documentation. This is the biggest area that we fight with day in, day out at our third-party administration company. Somebody comes in and they are being foreclosed, which is one of the reasons you can take a hardship. Well, being late on your payment is not being foreclosed. And we even had one who participant who submitted a letter signed allegedly by a bank. And one of my astute administrators noticed that the bank's logo didn't look quite right. And they questioned it, brought it to me, and I called the bank and asked for the business manager who allegedly signed the foreclosure notice. and ask for him, and they go, "Who's that? We've never had anybody work here by that name." And that's just fraud.
So close. They were so close.
They were so close. One approval away from getting their money, but we caught it, and we try and do that in all cases. And it was, of course, reported back to the employer that they had fraudulently attempted to take money out of their plan, and they were fired shortly thereafter. So don't recommend that. But we have to get documentation. I had another case where it was medical expenses, and this person, you really feel bad for them. I really do, because they had some very significant medical expenses relating to an illness. It wasn't their fault. It just happened. And they made the mistake at the hospital's pressuring of giving them a credit card. So they had thousands of dollars in medical expenses, and they gave the hospital a credit card. Now the balance was switched over to their credit card. Well, that's not a medical expense. That's a credit card expense. So the fact that they paid them with credit cards made them ineligible for getting a hardship to pay for the medical expenses. So there's lots of little ins and outs and rules relating to how this whole thing works as you're coming down with it. And that's why a good third-party administrator is necessary to make sure you maintain qualification with the law.
Absolutely. I mean, all those little nuances and so forth, it just takes a couple questions, a call to your plan administrator to make sure that everything's on the up and up, because if it's not, the penalties can be severe, the penalties can be stiff. Okay, so far we've talked about the SEP IRA and the SIMP IRA. They are fairly easy. The 401k is the most common. We talked about that. Let's jump to the Safe Harbor 401k, because we don't have much time left. The Safe Harbor 401k is very similar to the 401k, the traditional 401k that we just talked about, but it is a way. There is a way for the employer to avoid the ADP, ACP, and top-heavy discrimination testing with the plan. So, if the employer does one of two matching schedules, it's a dollar for dollar on the first 3%. And then 50 cents on the next two, or just a straight 3% of compensation to all eligible employees. As long as they follow that, then they're eligible for some of the safe harbor provisions that I just mentioned. But everything else is basically similar as to the traditional 401k, as far as the limits they contribute, the amount that the for catch up, and all that is the same. So really, it's just type of vesting schedule. I'm not vesting schedule. I'm sorry. Type of matching schedule that frees up or eliminates some of the testing that's done on the plans on an annual basis to make sure that the highly compensated aren't putting more away than the rank. There's all these complicated calculations that my partner so eagerly does on a day-to-day basis.
Eagerly. Definitely eagerly. The history behind that, real quickly, because we're down to about 2 minutes, is in 1981, 401k plans were first adopted in general use. And the first few years, they typically were trustee-directed assets. So the trustee was investing the money and directing how the money was invested. And there was some concern, because if he had a lot of older employees, was he conservative enough? If he had a lot of younger employees, was he aggressive enough? And they came out with the safe harbor provision, which said that if they do certain things, they can be protected from that liability. And one of the things that they could do in safe harbor contribution, they did not have to do anti-discrimination testing. So therefore, the owner, and that was commonly what I'd hear from the owner, is, "I can't put any money in my plan, or I keep getting money back in March. Why is that?" It's because the plan wasn't designed right. And if it's a safe harbor plan, then we avoid all that testing, and they can pretty much max out where they need to be. And it's coffee time.
It is coffee time.
Coffee time. Today's coffee was, I knew John would like it, Espresso Deluxe. It's the regular version of that. It's a special age-old blend. Creates a rich and tangy coffee that's both soothing and invigorating.
It did wake me up. Like I said, I was mailing it in when I got in here, but as I continue to drink it throughout the show, I perked up a wee bit.
Well, the brew has been described as the ultimate espresso experience. I think I'd have to agree with that, and we can thank both Scott and Nancy over at the Chef Shop in Edwardsville, the Gourmet Kitchen Store, They're at 2320 Troy Road, Edwardsville, Illinois, 62025, in the Schnucks Plaza next to Target, 618-659-9840. Go in there and sample some of the wonderful coffee, the popcorn, the fudge is one of my favorites. And in not too many weeks, there's going to be an extra surprise for you if you mention listening to the show. You want to talk about that, John?
Yes, actually, probably this weekend or early next week, the show will be providing the Chef Shop with various gifts to be handed out to patrons that come in and say, hey, we heard about you on the Fiduciary Cafe. And then you say that, you mention that, and you will get a special gift.
Can I get one?
No, I already gave you one.
Oh, come on. Okay, I guess I'll have to go with that. Thanks again to the Chef Shop for sponsoring us. Thanks to WSIE, Steve Jankowski, and all for allowing us to come in and record the show, provide some hopefully fun and educational information regarding your finances. We will be stepping in through a lot of different topics as the weeks go by. Send us your questions to llexo@nickelfinancial.com or jgraney@nickelfinancial.com. And we would answer them either on the air or directly if you so choose. But the Financial Cafe, heard here every Saturday, 9 a.m. to 9:30. Soon we will have our website and blog set up so you can go back and visit past shows. So if you missed the one on annuities or life insurance or how to find a financial planner, those would all be good to go back and listen to again. That's hopefully within weeks. We're getting close. I can't wait to get them out there. Then everybody can have an opportunity to visit with them again. So I guess that wraps us up for today, John.
I think it does. Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
We will see you later.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at llexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to the Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.